All right, I want to welcome a new friend of mine into the show today. I am so intrigued by her story, and it was just on my heart to bring her story to you. I'm going to be hearing it firsthand for the first time too, but I think you're going to be really blessed by this conversation. So please welcome to the show, Natalie Beisner. Hi, Natalie. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Diane. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome. Welcome. Glad to have you. So I got to tell you, you popped up in my newsfeed on Twitter. I saw this great video that you had done with this American flag behind you, and it just caught my eye when you said that you were a former liberal Hillary Clinton voter, all of that. And then you had like this dramatic change of heart. So I just had to hear the story firsthand. I loved your video, but inquiring minds want to know, like, what happened? Like, what? Please share with us.
In a nutshell, it was summer 2020 that really changed my whole life. I don't know about anyone else. I know 2020 was a big year.
Yeah.
Going back a little bit, I think that God had been planting some seeds before that. I was an actress in Hollywood for a long time. I did mostly theater. So nothing that anyone would have ever seen, probably. I'm no longer pursuing that, but I remember around 2017, 2018, really noticing this push for racial diversity, especially in casting calls. Mm. And obviously we've seen that expand, you know, and I have no problem with racial diversity. I do have a problem with it being your highest value.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to tell stories, and it was very clear that there was one story that theater really seemingly wanted to tell, all the theaters that I was a part of, and not everybody else's story. And it was also the first time I heard the phrase white privilege, which obviously we've all since heard many, many times. Yeah. But I remember 2017, 2018 for me was the first time I heard it. And to be honest, that didn't sit right with me because I'm really blessed. I think we're all blessed to live in America, and I'm blessed in a lot of ways, but I watched my parents struggle. I watched family members struggle in many ways, including financially. And so this idea of having some kind of softer life solely because I'm white, nothing to do with, you know, being able-bodied or having two parents or anything like that, just because I'm white. It didn't sit well with me. And so those were kind of some seeds that were planted of like, it wasn't enough for me to really become political in any way. I had no idea about anything going on at all. I hated Donald Trump. couldn't tell you why I hated him, just knew that I hated him. Like you mentioned, I voted for Hillary Clinton. I drove 100 miles round trip to vote for Hillary Clinton, just to vote for her. I did not know anything else on the ballot.
Wow. Yes.
I'm embarrassed by that. Yes. Yeah. You know, I was with her. And again, I just voted for her. Did not touch anything else on the ballot. Because I was still registered in a different county. That's why I drove so far. But I really invested in that. And I also had another seed planted in the sense that my dad was a big Trump supporter. Even though I hated him, and as people were saying all of these things about it being fueled by white supremacy and racism, that is not my dad. So I'm grateful for that experience because it kind of kept me grounded of like, I didn't go way off the deep end because I had firsthand knowledge of someone that I loved, who I know is not the things that people are saying. So I think that those little things were stepping stones, mm-hmm. but what really changed my whole point of view, and it wasn't an overnight thing to become a Christian conservative after being liberal, atheist, feminist, Democrat, but what really started the shift for me to at least walk away from the Democrat Party was in summer 2020, I had been on board with all of the COVID restrictions, and I live in LA still. I lived in LA throughout 2020. And obviously they were very heavy in LA. They were very heavy all over in 2020. But I had done my part. I had lost my jobs. I wore a mask in the grocery store, never wore one outside. And people gave me grief for that, which was something I didn't really understand, even as a liberal at the time. And yeah. I'm not a scientist, but it didn't make sense to me that I could be outside away from you completely on the other side of the street, and people would stop and scream at me. And that was something that was very jarring because I'm really like a rule follower. But it just didn't make sense to me to mask up outdoors in the sun in LA. So there were little things here and there, but I continued to do my part. You know, I stayed home. I didn't see my family, anything like that. And then when George Floyd was killed, and it was very obvious, implicitly and also explicitly, we were told basically that you can go out and protest or riot, because riots happened, on behalf of BLM. But you can't go out and protest against lockdowns, and you can't certainly go back to work or anything like that. That blew my mind. I remember seeing in the New York Times, you know, 1,000 doctors signed a letter, don't shut down these protests. And of course, I don't want you to shut down BLM protests or any protests that I may or may not disagree with. But it was crazy to me because we were like smack dab in the middle of this allegedly deadly pandemic. Yeah. And of course, now in retrospect, obviously people were outdoors. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it probably was relatively safe, but they were even saying that they don't spread COVID, but protests against lockdowns do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just outrageous stuff to even the untrained eye. You know, again, I'm not a scientist. And that felt like such a punch in the gut, because when I would bring it up to a lot of my liberal acquaintances and friends and these people that I had done theater with for a long time, and I would write these really long, polite Facebook posts, you know, just about, I don't understand why there's caution tape around the park and the jungle gym, it's outdoors, or around the exercise machines at the park, they're 6 feet apart and they're outdoors in the sun. And I don't understand why I can't go back to work. Repeatedly, every single time without fail, I was told that I was selfish and also racist, which I didn't really understand. And that blew my mind. It blew my mind. And the thing is that it wasn't just a little blip like, oh, sorry, we lost our minds for a couple weeks or a couple months. Like I said, LA, we had a mask mandate up until 2022, an indoor mask mandate. And we had vaccine passports. There was a period where I couldn't go into the library. I couldn't go into bars and restaurants. And obviously, that's not the worst atrocity in the world, but we brought back legalized segregation in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to forget that. I don't want to become bitter about it. But when I walked away in summer 2020, the Democrats, because I'm not going to say Republicans did everything right with COVID, but Democrats are in charge of my city, my county, my state. Mm-hmm. And they held on to it for as long as possible. Yeah. So they just proved me right every single day that, you know, it's not the party I thought it was. I thought it was the party for the underdog and the 99% and the struggling and the this and the that. But I watched their response in COVID. And again, at the beginning, we didn't really know what was going on. And so I offer a little bit of grace for that. Yeah. I was, like I said, I was on board for 2 weeks, even 2 months, whatever. But it's the party that I thought cared about mental health, about economic suffering. And what I looked around and saw continually, and we've never really gotten an apology for it, is that nothing else mattered in 2020, 2021, other than COVID. Right. And if you weren't going to survive it financially, or you weren't going to survive it in terms of mental or emotional health or kids at school or anything, it just did not matter. And so many of us were sounding the alarm. And I think we're just beginning to see the effects of what we did, unfortunately. So yeah, I was able to walk away from what I feel is kind of a cult. And that was the beginning of me just being able to kind of open my eyes to new points of view. And from there, over the course of about, I guess, a year and change, I became a conservative. I realized I agree with conservative points of view more often than not. And I also found Jesus after I was raised Catholic, and went to Catholic school all my life, but I left the church for about 10 years. So yeah, it was a big change, but didn't happen overnight. But certainly summer 2020 was a big shift for myself and many others.
Yeah, I bet. Well, first of all, let me say on behalf of Republicans, welcome. You know,
thank you.
A very, very warm welcome. You know, and I'm sure your dad was happy. I'm sure. So I would love to hear, I mean, it's a great, such a great story, but I would love to personally hear how you found your way back to Christ. Like, what was that moment for you?
I think it was interesting for me because I definitely, a political shift preceded any kind of faith shift. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's common. And it wasn't just, well, I'm a conservative now, so I have to believe, but it was really just, I was very unhappy prior to COVID, prior to the madness. I was very lost. I had been acting, like I said, but had left that already and was just kind of drifting through life and drifting through LA. And I think like a lot of people, it was, for better or worse, like a time to reflect on a lot of what was going on a micro and a macro scale. And I just kind of realized that there was a better way to live and that mm-hmm. the way that I had been living, which was much more secular and much more what the mainstream tells you to do and feminism tells you to do, et cetera, that it had not brought me, I mean, I don't know that happiness so much is the priority, but it hadn't brought me fulfillment or contentment. And it was sort of opening my eyes to the lies of the Democrat Party and the lies that I'd been fed that allowed me to open my eyes to more lies of just living in this secular world, especially in Hollywood, you know, right in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
And I just started opening my Bible, which I never thought I would have done. It was challenging because a lot of the churches were closed at the time around me, and that was a disappointment. Mm-hmm. And so it was a struggle to find, you know, like a faith community and to really know where to start, or they were masking or whatever else. And I just wasn't going to do that. But yeah, I still have a long way to go in my faith journey, but it's definitely, I'm very grateful for the experience that I had in 2020 and 2021 and living in LA, as challenging as it was at times. Cause I don't know, I don't know, but Christ definitely used it to bring me back to him.
I love that. I love that. And let me say on behalf of Christians everywhere, welcome.
Thank you.
You know,
Thank
I don't you. Mean to sound cheesy, but it's just, you know, I'll tell you, Natalie, like there was a time when, so I grew up, my father was a pastor when I was very young. And then when I was 8 years old, he left me and my mom for another woman. And so my family, we went from being like the pastor's family, right? Everything that comes with that mm-hmm. to taking like a hard left fully in the world. Like my mom just really turned on God and we just had no church, no anything for a long, long time. And I was in the secular world for a long time too. And, mm-hmm. and God called me back too. So I resonate with your story on that. And he reaches for, I mean, he just doesn't let us go. He just continues to reach for us. And what was a turning point for me was a pastor came to my house and a friend invited him over without me knowing. And I was really mad about it at first. I was like, what is this guy doing here? Like, you know, but what he said to me when you were telling your story, it just reminded me, he said, you know, has the world beat you up enough? Do you need to stay out there a little longer? You know, if you need to stay out a little longer, I understand. He says, but if you're ready to come home, Jesus's hand is extended to you. He wants you to take his hand. And that was so, I mean, everything inside of me just kind of fell apart. Like I was just, you know, a blubber ball. And when I took his hand, that pastor's hand that day, and like you say, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a long journey to really understand what that means and to grow in wisdom and all. But that was in the early 90s. And I guess I've been walking with him. It's taken me, you know, a long time to really understand and get rooted in that faith, in my faith, in my wisdom and all of that. But I'll tell you, walking with him in the dark and holding his hand, I'll take that over the lighted path all day long. Because that fulfillment and that peace and that just joy that you have, maybe not happiness, everything's not always giddy and happy, but that joy that is available to us cannot be found anywhere in the world. And it sounds like that's kind of the conclusion you came to also.
Yeah. That was very moving what you just said. I needed that reminder today. And I can only imagine, you know, your experience with your father. I think they call that oftentimes church hurt, you know, that people in the church have maybe hurt you. And so we're human and fallible and not always the best representation, obviously, of Christ.
Yeah.
What had caused me to leave the Catholic Church was really the scandal that broke out when I was like 18, 19 of, you know, a lot of what had gone on in terms of children and that kind of thing, and the undercover, how it had been kept under wraps, etc. So I kind of relate, although it's not as, you know, of course, personal as a father. It's I felt hurt by the Catholic Church in that sense and kind of betrayed. And so it took a long time.
Yeah. People hurt people, but Christ doesn't change, you know, and we are flawed. You know, we're flawed. And, you know, I think a lot of the Democrat Party nowadays, it used to be in the day, there used to be a time when, you know, there was a lot more common ground between the two parties. Mm-hmm. But we've just had this progressive wing that has sort of taken over. And it's once they kind of got that foothold in, now it's this demand that you conform, this demand, you know, there's no, there's no respect for other opinions. There's no respect for other points of view. Now it's just you, it's like you say, it's a cult in a way, in a lot of ways, not everyone in the Democrat Party, but certainly this progressive wing of it that has just hijacked the party in so many ways.
Yes.
So I feel like there are probably a lot of Democrats out there that feel the way you do. I think a lot of them have come to the Republican Party. But the conservative values, it's not so much about a candidate. It's about the values. And you're like, we teach in Lady Up America, the 7 founding values, which I learned 2 years ago from who's now the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. I got them from him. And that was my introduction, because up until 6 years ago, I didn't do anything political. I didn't know anything about politics. And I ran for office, and it's a long journey, but I found those 7 values, and they really are nonpartisan. They really are. When Joe Biden, people like that talk about the soul of our nation, those are the soul of our nation. And I think people, when you get caught up in emotion and all of that, it's like, it's such a smokescreen of what we actually stand for in this country and how that was all rooted in faith. It was all rooted in God's law. So I love that you came back. I would love to ask you, I'm just curious, what do you think could be done? Because there are so many Republicans that want to reach where you, the people who were where you were a couple of years ago. We want to reach those folks. We want to win them to conservative values. We want to win them to Christ. Is there anything that anybody could have said or done that could have helped? Do you think it's just people have to have their own wake-up call around it? Or do you think there's anything we can do to help shorten that learning curve a little, or shorten that path to sanity?
That's a tough, but a good question. I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. I think it was Yuri Bezmenov, who a video goes around of him explaining how you can brainwash an entire nation, you know, over the course of 10 years or something like that. I think it was former KGB, but I think it was him who said that you have to have a personal crisis in order to break out of that brainwashing, which I think a lot of, I know a lot of that is what this is. And so there's a part of me that thinks, not that I had not suffered prior to 2020, but that I just needed to suffer so profoundly and have it be right in front of my eyes. I felt, I'm sometimes confused why more people didn't wake up, for lack of a better phrase, because to me it was just so clear. Again, as someone who was totally on board at the time with BLM and with everything, but it was so clear the hypocrisy. And I really felt like I was suffering because of it, because I need to work. I have to work. I need my job. I need the income. I can't just rely off of unemployment and that kind of thing. So it was right in front of my face. I couldn't look away. Mm-hmm. But obviously that doesn't help in terms of, you know, garnering more people to our side. Mm-hmm. But I think the Democrats are doing a very good job of pushing people out on their own. Yeah. A lot of times people say, I'm sure you've heard that I didn't leave the party left me.
Yeah.
That was my experience at first until I did some research. And then I realized, well, no, this is really what makes sense. So many of these things that I used to support, you know, abortion really comes to mind because I'm very big in the pro-life community
now.
Good. it was really just based on emotion, and it wasn't based on fact, and it wasn't, it was all an appeal to emotion, like you just mentioned. And it was very eye-opening to realize, well, actually science and truth and ethics and God, because God is on our side. And I'm not saying that every Republican gets it right, but as you pointed out, the progressives have taken over the Democrat Party. I mean, in many ways, Joe Biden is like one of the most progressive presidents that we've really ever had. And he was not, you know, sold to us in that fashion. And obviously he's a, I don't even think he believes in some of the stuff that he's doing. But they have really taken over the party. And so it is really alienating a lot of people, I think, especially with this transgender thing. And so one of the best things that I found is that people, largely Republicans, certainly Christians, but even if everyone doesn't become a Republican, I have found mostly nothing but a warm welcome on the other side of things. Like I said, when we were talking a little bit before we recorded, I'm part of the walkaway movement, and there's a very large movement of people who have walked away. And again, their story may not be exactly like mine. Maybe they're not outspoken conservative Christians online. But a lot of people are feeling alienated by the Democrat Party, and it's no longer liberals. It's no longer liberal values of free speech and live and let live and that kind of thing, which is something that I absolutely, am behind free speech. And to a certain extent, I'm behind live and let live as well, but they have completely, completely abandoned that. So I think they're doing a good job alienating people. I think the best thing we can do is continue to be welcoming, which doesn't necessarily mean letting go of Christian or conservative principles, and just welcoming everyone in, no matter what you believe, but certainly not being as crazy as they are, because you can't even ask questions. That's what I found, is you can't ask questions about BLM. You can't ask questions about COVID. Now, 3 years later, we've all been proven right. But there's other things you can't question, like the trans thing. And sadly, in a few years' time, and I wish it, I pray that it's sooner rather than later, will be proven right as we continue to see more and more lawsuits and children suffering because of this. And so you cannot, there is no discussion. You can't question anything. And then in terms of, you know, bringing people to Christ, like I said, I'm usually a poor imitator of Christ, but obviously preaching the gospel is what we're all called to do. So yeah, I wish there was an easier way to, I think Republicans kind of need to get in the trenches a little bit more. A lot of us just want to be left alone, which I also understand. But Democrats are more organized, you know, they're chasing ballots, they're going after it. And I do think we're going to have to play the same game that the Democrats do. And I say that with some hesitancy, because I don't want to, you know, do anything that's not above board, but it's hard because we are more principled, you know, and I don't know if that's going to continue to work moving forward. I think we shouldn't abandon our principles, but we are in a fight for our nation. You know, I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that this is obviously really the most important election of our lifetime. And I think it's a very consequential election. So I don't know how to get everyone over to our side. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people need to suffer, and I think a lot of people are suffering in America. I think it's going to continue to get worse in many ways before it gets better. So yeah, just be there and keep speaking the truth. When I make my videos online, I don't necessarily think I'm changing anyone's mind, because I imagine that someone who's really put off is just going to keep scrolling or send a hateful message. But I think it's important to keep speaking the truth, because truth will always be truth. But I don't think it's preserved for the next generation unless we speak it. And right now we're seeing an attack on truth. You know, this idea that men can get pregnant and men can become women, et cetera. And if you don't keep speaking the truth, whether or not someone sees your video and just sees the light, I think that's rare. But maybe we can be there when they do wake up, when, you know, Christ does bring them to the light.
That's so good. Everything you said, I completely agree. And, you know, one of the things that we do in Lady Up, I have an app, and I teach women what God has just shown me over the last couple of years. When I think back to when I was in the secular world, and I think back to the things I was doing that were wrong, but I didn't even realize they were wrong, right? Maybe I didn't think about it. I was, and I, my life was very fast. I was always, you know, I had so many stressors and things like that. So I didn't really have time to stop and think, well, how do I feel about this? How do I, you know, it was just, life was coming at me really fast and hard. But if people would have asked me a really deep question where it stopped me in my tracks and I had to sit and go, well, I never thought about it like that, you know, it probably would have made an impact on me quicker. Like I think when they're rooted, when those questions are really well crafted, they're rooted in faith, they're not mean-spirited, they're not gotcha questions, you know, but they're just loving questions that force you to have to stop and think about what you're doing, not judgmental, but just a very well-crafted question. If more people would have done that, I think it may have shortened my learning curve a little bit. But I didn't really have anybody doing that. I had people judging. I had plenty of people pointing fingers and saying, you shouldn't be doing that. That's wrong, you know. But if they would have just helped me see it for myself, I think that would have woken me up. I don't know, but I think it would have woken me up. I used to apply this tactic in business all the time. I used to be in businesses that were in crisis and everybody's stressed out, freaked out, you know, and I would come in and I would use a lot of these techniques that I teach now in the business world. And then when COVID hit and we were going through all that, I was going through a lot of stuff with my son, who was very liberal and very much against my platform. I started praying on this and I just wondered if those same techniques would work in this political fight that we're in for our country. It's not even a political mm-hmm. fight. It's a spiritual battle. We know that. So I started testing it out and what has evolved is this app, this Lady Up America app, and where I go through and I've tested these techniques and everything I've done. I did a tour ahead of the midterms last year to test them all out. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy, you know, that they might actually work. So we've got this 6-week challenge in the app, and it's where people can kind of walk through these steps, very digestible teaching in there, but on-demand videos, that kind of thing. But it takes them eventually to the point where we've got this catalog of what I call lingering questions. And so on every political topic that's out there, it gives people kind of a starting point. I want people to eventually craft their own questions, but it gives them a starting point on how to do it and a few, like 2 or 3 based on each topic. If it's transgenderism, abortion, you know, CRT, whatever it is that we're facing right now, it just gives us a way to drop a question that stops people in their tracks. And then you don't sit there and argue about it. You don't sit there and debate the question. You just drop it and you kindly say, you know, it's just some food for thought. And then you say, it's really good to see you. I got to run. Maybe when I see you next week, we can pick up where we left off. So these are people you encounter over and over again that are in your own sphere of influence. And I think that's our best way to influence is the people that we see all the time. Maybe we can't go out and reach total strangers all over the world, all over the country, but we can reach the several hundred people we encounter, you know, in our lives. So it's just something, but I wonder, we've tested them. They seem to work really, really well. Do you think that might have worked on you during that time when you were still kind of coaching? Do you think that's something that would have resonated with you?
At the time, yeah. I mean, I'm interested to check out your app. It sounds very compelling. And I think you're right on track. Yeah. And I know that even when you're not talking about debating anyone necessarily and going back and forth tit for tat, right. But even in debating, you know, the best debaters largely ask questions, you know, and yeah. are asking questions again and again. So yes, I like to think I would have been open to it, but I really, really don't know. Cause I was just so, I wasn't like a zealot in the streets, you know, burning things down or whatever, but yeah. I was very, very brainwashed, and I very much believed that, and I think most people believe, not at the higher up, but most Americans who lean Democrat, whatever, call themselves progressives, I believed that I was being compassionate. I believed that I
was. Yes, of course.
That was the right kind way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you believe so that.
You're right about, yes, the questions and the making you think and that is really, really so helpful because unfortunately so many in the church have fallen for this stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. the CRT, which is totally antithetical to the gospel, this idea that white people have some additional sin that we've got to atone for, you know, as if Christ wasn't sufficient. That is, you know, not correct at all. But then there's also a lot of judgment too coming mm-hmm. from, you know, sometimes conservatives, Christians, and it's a challenge because the other side, I mean, I hate to say this side and that side, because it's obviously not necessarily so black and white, but the other side holds up the sin, holds up the vice, not only accepts it, but like holds it up as something to aspire to.
Yes.
And obviously for many people in the secular world, like that is really tempting, that, you know, everything you're doing is okay. And in fact, it's continue doing it and all of that. And so we do have a real challenge on our hands because of course we're called to repent and we're telling people, you know, inviting people to the gospel and to repent. And that is not nearly so inviting initially, you know, if you're not at all familiar with it. And so often online, I see people, and again, social media, I don't think it's really built to change anyone's minds, unfortunately, but I see a lot of people just like dropping Bible quotes, you know, to like prove someone wrong about abortion or this and that. And I don't think that's very impactful because unfortunately it's easy to write off God. You know, it shouldn't be, it's not when, you know, you go deeper, but it's really easy to just say, well, I don't believe in that. That's your God, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then that's sort of it. So I think what you're talking about with asking these questions is really profound.
Thank you. Yeah. Sin is fun, right? I mean, it in the moment, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I get it, but the lasting consequences are not fun, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it always comes up short. It always comes up making us feel emptier, emptier and emptier,
yes.
You know? But anyway, just bringing women to the point where they can become a modern day Yoda, where they're gently and lovingly and compassionately guiding people to their own aha moment, I call it, guiding them to their own, where they go, oh my gosh, I never thought about it like that. And that they can't get that question out of their head. And now you've not repelled them with your judgment. Now the next time you see them, they actually want to talk to you, you know, and then they go, you know, I looked that up and you're right. And you go, I know, right? Well, and then you can drop the next one and two or three of those and you've won them. You know, that was always my tactic. So it doesn't have to be a fight. It doesn't have to be a big series of judgments, you know, judgmental conversations or even confrontations. It can just be so much more graceful than that. And so anyway, that's all the work that God's called me to now is I'm just on this mission, you know, to really help women understand that and win people with that graceful approach.
So
anyway,
that's great. And women are probably uniquely called to be able to do that gracefully and lovingly sort of do that. And then that's really wonderful.
Thank you. Well, I really, really appreciate this meetup. I can't tell you how much I know this is going to bless my listeners so much, but thank you so much, Natalie. Really, really appreciate you. And I hope we get to talk again soon. Good luck on the walk away event too. Yeah.
Thank you. I love that, Diane.